Radio News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Today, the Socrates Exchange is back, our monthly philosophy program where we ponder one question through the Socratic method of inquiry. It's a little different from our regular program. We're not asking our guests for their knowledge or opinions. We're simply spending the hour with you, examining one question, not trying to answer it per se, but to travel down some of the philosophical paths it might open up. My co-host for the hour is Nick Smith. He's an assistant professor of philosophy at UNH, advisor to UNH's Socrates Society, and project advisor to the Socrates Exchange. And the question Nick and I will look at this hour with you is this: are all our beliefs opinions, or are there some universal truths? A conversation's already been taking place online at the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org, and later on we'll share some of those postings with you. Right now, though, join us with your thoughts on this question. Again, are all our beliefs opinions, or are there some universal truths? The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And Nick Smith, welcome back. It's really nice to see you.
Good morning, Laura. Good to be here.
Well, just remind us, Nick, it's been a couple months now. Remind us of how this works in terms of your role and the listener's role.
Instead of typical programs where you might have a caller call in and ask me and us a question and go off the air waiting for me to pontificate on something, it's more of a call in, ask a question, state an opinion, a position on the issue. And I'm going to ask a few questions to see how deep we can get into the issue. So it takes a bit of courage. You can't just sort of ask the question and go run and hide in private. You have to sort of stay online and see where this conversation leads us. And it is difficult, and it takes, as I said, a bit of courage, because these are big questions that often strike at the real heart of our core values. So it's tough sledding.
Well, but it's fun, and it stretches our brains at 9 o'clock.
I make
a
living
out
of it, and it's very fun. Yeah.
Here's the number again, Nick: 1-800-892-6477. Nick and I will be nice. Don't worry about that. 1-800-892-6477. And Nick, in terms of the question we're pondering this hour, again, are all our beliefs opinions, or are there some universal truths? Just prime the pump for us a little bit, Nick, in terms of the avenues that we might be going down this hour.
For me, this is one of the very basic philosophical questions that no matter what sorts of courses I teach, this kind of question is often the first thing we have to do some groundbreaking on. And I admit to changing my mind about this question at least three different times.
Really?
In my life. And I still wonder. Basically, what we're trying to figure out is whether and in what sense truth exists in any sense that's rich and universal and robust, other than just a matter of mere opinion. So we all have beliefs, values, opinions about any number of things, and there can be a temptation sometimes to think that all beliefs, values, opinions are equal, right? So you like chocolate, I like vanilla, that all sort of claims are that sort of have that kind of status. But when we push a little harder, it becomes difficult to sustain that, and it starts to look like some opinions maybe really are better and that we can be fundamentally wrong about things, and trying to sort out which kind of things we can be wrong about, which sort of things are just a matter of taste is, I think, quite difficult, in part because no one likes to admit being wrong, and if you find that you're wrong, you may have to fundamentally change the way you think, the way you live, etc.
Wow. All right. Again, the number on the Socrates Exchange. That's the question that we're pondering. Are all our beliefs opinions, or are there some universal truths? Let's hear what you think about that. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Now, Nick, for some people, this question of universal truth, opinion, is more than just food for thought. It's part of their daily work. Exchange executive producer Keith Shield spoke with a law professor about how this question of are there some universal truths intersects with people in the legal profession.
I'm Kimberly Kirkland. I'm a professor at Franklin Pierce Law Center. I teach a course here on ethics. It's titled Ethics, Morals, and the Practice of Law. there's a lot of law practice that would lead a lawyer to think that truth might not matter, because a lot of what lawyers are asked to do is to achieve a client's goal. The right or wrong is not a question. The question is just, how do I get from here to there? But having said that, I think most lawyers find that they have to believe in what they do in some respect. And so most lawyers find a place to plant the moral flag. So something that they believe is right, not just a matter of opinion. For instance, many criminal defense lawyers may represent folks who they think are guilty, but they feel justified in representing this person because they believe the person's constitutional rights have been violated. And they see it as their job to protect individuals from the power of the state, and the Constitution does that. And the core of those constitutional protections, they would say absolute truths. And then it doesn't matter whether the client did it or didn't do it. What matters is they believe in something, some core truth, and the work they do supports that. Most lawyers believe that there are certain core sort of procedural truths. Things like, if each side has a lawyer, then each side is protected. And so there's a core truth that as long as both sides are represented, then they have a fair shake at getting justice. But lawyers are sort of unique in that the lawyer is not responsible for finding truth. In the litigation setting, the lawyer is responsible for putting on his or her client's best version of what happened and of the legal rights and wrongs that took place, if any. It's the judge's or the jury's job to find the truth. And if that's true, if it's procedurally fair, then the other folks in the system who are responsible for finding the truth can do that. And that leaves the lawyer free not to worry so much about the truth. In the criminal system, because a prosecutor has to prove his or her case beyond a reasonable doubt, any time that there's been a conviction, it's an acknowledgement that you can't, in many circumstances, capture 100% what has happened. So, for instance, if you've got an armed robbery, if the jury comes back and convicts, they've decided that there's no reasonable doubt that this defendant was involved in that armed robbery. I think the legal system assumes, and most lawyers assume, that you can make that judgment without having to have been there. You're not going to be able to capture exactly what happens, but the legal system assumes that we can come to a good enough truth. And I think most lawyers are comfortable with that, that between the prosecution presenting its version of what happened and the defense presenting its version of what happened, the jury can get a good enough sense of what went on in order to make a determination, and make a determination that's as true as it needs to be.
That conversation with Franklin Pierce Law Center Professor Kimberly Kirkland was produced by Exchange Executive Producer Keith Shields. Again, today in The Exchange, it's the Socrates Exchange, where once a month we ponder one question with you by asking more questions through the Socratic method of inquiry. The question this month, are there universal truths, or are all our beliefs merely opinions? My co-host for this Socrates Exchange is UNH Assistant Professor of Philosophy, Nick Smith. He's the project advisor to us also here at the Socrates Exchange. And Nick, before we go to our callers, very quick thoughts from you on that piece. You're a former lawyer yourself. Universal truths for lawyers.
Yeah, Professor Kirkland really laid the ground beautifully. There's that sense, she said. Sometimes attorneys need to plant the moral flag in her language. There is a sense in common culture that attorneys are just hired guns for argumentation, and if you pay them enough, they'll argue for anything. Yet there's a sense that if you're going to be an attorney with any integrity, you have to have some moral compass, that either you believe in the legal system to the extent that as long as you do your job, the truth will come out. And she used the phrase that attorneys believe they can find good enough truth, that there's some, all right, if we're close enough statistically, it's good enough truth. You know, is that satisfying enough?
All right. Let's invite our listeners now with us, Nick. And first up is Suzanne from Nashua. Go ahead, Suzanne. You're on the Socrates Exchange and welcome.
Hi, good morning. The one universal truth that I recognize is that everything is impermanent and everything changes. Nothing is permanent.
So there's one universal truth. Stay on the line with us, Suzanne. Go ahead.
Suzanne, that's a powerful candidate for a universal truth. Can you say a little bit about how you know that for certain? How do you know that things couldn't just suddenly become stable or not changing or intransient? And exactly what is it that changes? It's sort of two different questions. How do you know that things will always be changing? And, for example, you know, say the universe ends. That would seem in some ways to be the end of change or evolution. How can you be certain?
Well, I think that everything that we know, at least historically, we see proof that everything changes. We could look at a mountain that's been there for thousands and thousands of years, but it's not the same mountain. That changes over time with weather. It's not just a belief. I feel I know it.
And is it that everything is always changing? I mean, could there be, say, some universal truths like 2 plus 2 being equal to 4? Is that something that's never going to change?
Oh, you're not asking a mathematician.
You know what, Suzanne? You are a trooper for calling in on this. Nick and I were talking before the show. At some point, someone down the line could say 2 plus 2 is really 4.00005. So I want to thank you very much for joining us on the Socrates Exchange
sure,
today,
thanks.
Suzanne.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. It's the Socrates Exchange today. And the question we're pondering is, are there some universal truths or are all our beliefs merely opinions? And Nick Smith, we're going to go into the break with a posting on our website from Ruby. She says, I do believe there to be one universal truth. The world is constantly changing. I have never known it to stay the same. And I've never known people, plants, animals, weather, or soil to remain the same. I have seen no argument to the contrary. And in spite of the acknowledged limitations of myself as a human, I would have great difficulty believing anything else. Thanks, Ruby, for that posting. We'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from UR members and from Irwin Toyota Scion, proud of its new facility on Bisson Avenue in Laconia, and home to the all-new 2010 Toyota Prius Hybrid, rated at over 50 miles per gallon, irwinzone.com. And Green Home Energy Systems, a provider of fully installed energy-efficient windows, metal roofing, and siding. Information at greenhomeenergysystems.com. More of the Socrates Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio and attend this morning on the Diane Rehm Show, Consumer Spending and the U.S. Economy. New Hampshire weather today, partly sunny, slight chance of some showers or thunderstorms, highs in the 80s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, humid, lows tonight, low 60s north, lower 70s south. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly cloudy and humid, some showers and thunderstorms, highs tomorrow in the 80s. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today it's our Socrates Exchange, where once a month we examine one question using the Socratic method of inquiry, asking more questions and more questions. Now this month we're asking, are there some universal truths or are all our beliefs merely opinions? What do you think of this? 1-800-892-6477. How would you answer that question? Our number, 1-800-892-NHPR. My co-host for the Socrates Exchange today is Nick Smith, assistant professor of philosophy at UNH and project advisor to us on the Socrates Exchange. And Nick, let's go to more of our callers. Lots of people jumping in this hour, so that's great. Next up is Edward from Nashua. Hi, Edward. Go ahead.
Hello.
Morning.
It's been a while since I've spoken to you, Laura.
Well, welcome back, Edward.
Yes. Well, I just want to cut to the chase. God does prove his existence. Jehovah God proves his existence. And I'll be quick. If you'll turn to Daniel chapter 11, verses 11 and 12, you'll see there are two sets of days, 1,290, 1,335. When you add them up, it's 2,625. Okay? Now, when you take, I have actually a number of them, but this is just one example pertinent to my status as the faithful and wise steward. Add up the four name numbers to the corresponding numbers to the letters in my name, Edward Eddie L. Conklin, Jr., and you have 55, 45, 78, and 87.
So what about your thoughts, Edward, on are there some universal truths? Are there? What do you think?
Well, math is the only proven science, and this logically, Jehovah being an all-wise God would use math, and what you do when you add up my name numbers, the same number reemerges.
Okay, two huge issues when it comes to universal truth. Hold on, Edward. Okay, I'm going to get Nick Smith in with you.
Yeah, when we try to make those sort of numerological connections between issues of faith and issues of mathematics, it speaks to how one might prove the absolute universal truth of one's God, and we might marshal mathematical evidence. Can you say a little bit about when you read biblical verse, how does that count as proof for universal truth to you? I mean, why is that different, say, from what you see with your eyes or what you read in the newspaper? Why does biblical truth have more authority for you?
Okay, at Luke chapter 12, verses 41 through 46, we're told of the faithful and wise steward. Jesus says, "Who is that faithful and wise steward whom his Lord shall make ruler over the household to give them their meat in due season? Blessed is that steward when his master on arriving finds him so doing."
Yeah, can you say a little bit about, no matter what you were to read from verse, why that counts as authority for you? Because I know, say I have my own books and I read them, and you say, no, my authority is better authority than yours. Why is your authority of sort of more legitimacy or more certainty?
Okay, well, let's turn to Daniel. Jesus said that Daniel was a prophet, okay? There's only five books that are really worthwhile right now. That's Daniel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four Gospels, and Daniel. And at Daniel chapter 12, 11, 12, there is two sets of days, like I told you, 1,290, 1,335. When you add them up, you have 2,625.
These are some of the numbers that you were getting at before, and I appreciate, Edward, so much the call. You know, math is an area, Nick, where a lot of people feel it's a universal truth, 2 + 2 = 4.
Mm-hmm. And when we see how we might be tempted to simply continue to cite verse to sort of demonstrate universal validity, the problem we run into, and this was sort of a problem that philosophers have grappled with for a long time, what counts as evidence rather than strict dogma? Right? And this is the sort of question we have to, because we all have our beliefs, and to appreciate and think through which beliefs are justifiable, historically there comes a point when being biblical authority is no longer enough for many of us, and it may be that we take spiritual inspiration from holy books. Yet there are lots of competing holy books, and how we demonstrate which one has genuine universal authority over another, you have to do more than just cite your holy book. You have to appeal to something higher, something rational, logical, provable in some sense. And that's an exceedingly difficult task if those who are arguing, you know, remain at the level of citing their own verse. Mathematics, on the other hand, is a bit more of a universal language that, regardless of what holy book you appeal to, it seems like there is some sort of ability to arbitrate between competing conceptions of universal truths.
So are there some universal truths for mathematics? I know you're not a mathematician, but you've surely looked at this, Nick.
Well, it seems like whenever you're in search of a universal truth for, say, you just start an introductory class, the easiest candidate for most people is 2 + 2 = 4. And if you think 2 + 2 = 5, that's not just an opinion. It's not like I like chocolate, you like vanilla, I think 2 + 2 = 4, you think 2 + 2 = 5. One of us is wrong.
Let's go back to our callers. Edward, thanks a lot for that one. The number here on the Socrates Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. What do you think of the question we're pondering this month? Are there some universal truths, as there were for Edward, or are all our beliefs merely opinions? Let's go to Nick in Hampstead. Hi, Nick. Go ahead. You're on the Socrates Exchange.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine.
I'll be a little bit different from the previous caller. I'm sitting here trying to put this succinctly in my head.
You don't have to be succinct today, Nick. It's okay.
But I think one of the things that I believe is that there aren't really no universal truths. And that one of the things that Einstein taught us is that two observers can observe the same event from different perspectives and see two entirely different things. And, you know, that's kind of a scientific way of looking at it. And, you know, when you talk about relativity, it's a very, I don't know, narrowly focused observation. But we can also see that two observers, you know, can observe a crime, two witnesses can observe a crime, and also see two different things, or at least believe that they saw two different things. So my belief is that there are no universal beliefs because we can look at things from different perspectives. And because we're looking at things through, you know, different sets of eyes, we can disagree on what actually happens. You know, this happens from a relativistic standpoint, and it happens from a human interpretation of events type of standpoint.
Hold on the line, Nick in Hampstead. Go ahead, Nick Smith.
Excellent. This is an important position to really dig into. And in some ways, that position would have been really rare and unthinkable 500 years ago, and now it's an increasingly common view. If I could ask you a few questions. Would you think so that if you believe there are no universal truths and more or less all beliefs are relative to the observer, do you think that holds also for questions of things like mathematics, like we were talking about before?
That I don't know, and you know, that's a very good question, a real good point to dig into, too. If I can disagree, you know, if we can look at two events that happen, not from the human standpoint, but from a relativistic standpoint, and we know that those things happen, so if two observers see two different things happening, is there a universe, or is there some place where 2 plus 2 does indeed equal 5? I don't know the answer to that.
Good,
that's,
right.
That's
can
a real good question.
You can imagine how it would be conceivable, right, that, you know, more sophisticated mathematics would tell us that what, you know, two is just an artifact of human intellectual organization, and it's just a kind of stipulation that we made up, and it's really, you know, you go to a different dimension and it doesn't add up the same way. You could imagine that. Let me ask a slightly different kind of question. So if you believe that all truth is relative, how about your very belief that all truth is relative? How certain are you that all truth is relative? And how do you avoid a kind of contradiction by saying that all truth is relative except for what I believe, and I believe that all truth is relative, and that's universal?
Yeah, that's kind of like saying he's a liar, but he's lying, you know?
Right.
We can get into a dog chasing its tail argument on that one for sure, for absolute certain. But, you know, I don't have a real good answer on that one. I guess from a belief perspective, maybe I don't believe in anything. I'm not sure.
Good. Well, notice the kind of disposition you have to have the question then. Sort of, all right, you think at the moment that all beliefs are relative, but you could change your mind, or maybe it's just you're in the mood today to think that all beliefs are relative, and that could change, or you don't really hold it with authority like some people hold universalist views, say,
correct,
of faith or something like that. So
correct,
you're not that committed.
Yeah.
You know, Nick, I'll leave you with this. Nick, we got a couple postings that said the universal truth is death, that everybody's going to die.
But isn't death just change?
Change
throughout. And I think two callers ago, there was a gal that was talking about change being the universal truth. And, you know, again, I don't want to turn this into a physics discussion, but, you know, second law of thermodynamics tells us that change is inevitable. But the problem is that's how we observe time. We see things changing, and we measure time through change. But if time ends, if there's an end to time, then there's no more change, and second thermo goes out the window, right?
Yeah, that's a very profound thought. When you think of everything that we experience through time, and there are very good arguments that time is just another one of these sort of projections of the human mind, that time isn't really real, it's just a matter of our perceiving things. So if time is just relative, then change is also relative.
Yep.
All right. Well, both of you Nicks, thank you very much. Nick,
hey,
from
thanks.
Hampstead,
good
thoughts. All right, bye-bye. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Join us on the Socrates Exchange today. We are examining the question, are there some universal truths, or are all our beliefs opinions? Let's go next to Putney, Vermont. Dean's waiting there. Hi, Dean. You're on the Socrates Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Good.
Good. My ultimate truth is it's better to be alive. And basically, you know, the situation is that no matter what happens to you, and a lot of things do, and the thing that set me off on this call was that law professor has no concept of what happens. There is no truth in law except money. But I went through experiences in my life, and they were pretty strange, including losing my wife, et cetera, career, everything else. But, you get to a point where you just see that it's better to be alive. And there's no future in suicide, so there's an ultimate truth there.
Good, that's...
Stay on the line, Dean.
Yeah, stay on the line. That's a profound thought that I think most people can... It will really resonate with us. Yet at the same time, can you explain a little bit how there are how there might be some people who would think, for instance, those who sacrifice their life for some kind of higher cause or belief, right? Like, you know, we think of many of our greatest heroes, you know, consider... you know, the firefighters on 9/11 or something like that, those who went into near certain death knowing that there was a higher goal, whether it's serving a moral view or serving their God, that something is more universally important than their own existence. You have an idea how someone could possibly think that, given your view?
I could see they do it, but they're jumping to the next assumption that there is something. I mean, the first thing, you only can deal with the reality you have now. It's sort of a situation of that I always say about suicide or whatever is that, you know, you don't want to beat the bus. It's eventually going to get here. I mean, what, you know, you learn in philosophy, you know, my philosophy background goes to what they call contemporary civilization, and it's a situation of where I came from that anything is possible, but it's possible that we are chessmen on the board, as the Greeks say. We could be anything along the line. But the only reality we know, we're talking about realities here, and truths that we're dealing as ultimate truths within life. Those truths you're talking about may be truths in death, but we're not there yet.
Good, and notice that some people, we know that there's a certain demographic of people that think that death under certain conditions is better than life.
Well, someone who may be horribly racked with pain or on life support but not noticing anything. In those cases, some people say, Dean, that death is better.
They would, but they don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So there's.
You're back to your back.
Good
to
for
that
you.
Issue.
Yeah.
Good. And there's a sense
that's. That's catch 22 for you.
Dean, thanks a lot. Really
you're
appreciate
welcome.
It. Bye-bye. And to Warner next. Mitchell is on the Socrates Exchange. Mitchell, go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Yes. Thank you very much. I wanted to just argue that there has to be universal truth, especially in the realm of morality. You know, given, yes, cultures have different ideas, individuals have opinions, but you cannot have a morality unless there are self-evident truths. They don't have to be biblically based truths, simply self-evident truths. You know, the Western tradition calls this the natural moral law, moral common sense. In other words, I don't want to be beaten or robbed and murdered. Therefore, I cannot commit these violent acts upon other human beings because it goes against the principle. It goes against the law. And I also wanted to argue that one of the ways that we can recognize universal truths is that they work. In other words, if it's not universal, it has a tendency to sort of die, or it tends to be fashionable and it goes out of date. But if anything is universal or perennial, it has a way of persisting. It has a way of enduring. The Ten Commandments, for example, they haven't gone out of date, or they've been attacked. That haven't gone out of date.
So, Mitchell, if you don't have some universal core truths, it's all chaos?
Absolutely. It's moral chaos. You know, it's a kind of crazy pluralism in which nothing is absolutely true. Everything is a matter of hype or political opinion. Mm. Slavery can be right in one era. It can be wrong in another era. Abortion can be right in one era. It can be wrong in another era. Torture can be right in one era and wrong in another era. That is moral chaos. There are some unchangeable principles that constitute a human life.
Well, Mitchell, hold on.
Animals.
I really appreciate your thoughts. It's great. Nick Smith, go ahead. Mitchell, stay on the line.
You make an excellent point that for many people who hold relativistic views of morality, the first bit of evidence they'll trot out is just look around the world, look throughout history. Everyone does things differently, right? Where's the universal truth? And you're arguing that, you know, there are some core enduring truths. What I want to ask is, can you say a little bit about how we know which moral truths are universal? And I ask that because you mentioned sort of, you know, the ones that work are the pragmatic ones, but, you know, depends what you mean by work, right? If your objectives are racial purity, there are certain moral policies that will get you to that end. If your goals are male supremacy, there are certain moral views that will, you know, you will have a certain kind of moral code. And where we really tend to get into trouble is where different cultures and different belief groups, different religions disagree, say, for example, about homosexuality or polygamy or any number of things. How do we know which of the moral truths are universal and which are just sort of a biased opinion?
Sure, yes, that's certainly a legitimate point. I would say that there is such a thing called tradition, you know, that is, there is such a thing that we call the accumulated experience of the whole world. Edmund Burke calls this the moral capital, you know, as if we put this treasure in a bank. And certain universal truths work because you look at the fruits. That is, you look at the consequences. That is, look at the consequences of legalized abortion. Look what that does to the family. Look what that does to a culture by breeding violence. Look what that does to a culture by way of signaling that we solve problems by killing.
Good, good. If I could follow up a little bit, when you say the way to test for universal validity is in part by looking to tradition and the way things
and the fruits
and tradition and the way those traditions have functioned. You know, I might make an argument then, well, you know, what was really good for a culture is slavery, in part because it allows for, right, a certain demographic of people to, have a high standard of living. And anytime we look to tradition, that seems to really deny the possibility of progress. Right? How can we possibly move towards what some philosophers call enlightenment or moral progress generally, or gender equality or racial equality, if we're always looking to the past? Because if we look to the past on those issues, what we get is racism, misogyny, etc.
Well, and I want to thank you so much for joining us, Mitchell. I don't think we have time to scratch that one anymore, and it's great. And we did get some postings that raised some of the issues that Mitchell raised. Here's one that I'll share with you. He says, many of us don't want to sound like supremacists or imperialists, so we allow for the person who believes in Jesus or Muhammad as the one true God, as well as the atheist or agnostic. We genuinely believe a core truth that all people are created equal or that all cultures are equal. Then things come up like female circumcision or the sacrifice of animals, and some say that's not acceptable. So there's some more food for thought for you and others, Mitchell. Thanks for calling in. We'll be right back.
NHPR makes it easy for you to get rid of an old or unwanted car. Our vehicle donation program lets you do just that while getting a tax break and supporting the station all at the same time. When you donate your car to NHPR, we'll arrange to pick it up and auction it off. Then you get a notice of how much the car sold for, and you can deduct that amount from your taxes next April. Call 1-877-393-NHPR to get the process started, or visit nhpr.org.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Support comes from UR members and vineyard brands, importers of Los Cardos wines from the high-altitude mountain vineyards of Argentina, on the web at vineyardbrands.com. And from New Hampshire Solar Stores, offering clean, renewable solar energy and green living solutions for home and business. Information online at nhsolarstores.com. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, student loans. Who's seeking them these days? Who's getting them? And where's the money coming from? Email us your thoughts, concerns, and personal stories on this issue before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And join us tomorrow morning live at 9 for that. Today on The Exchange, it's the Socrates Exchange. And the question we're pondering this hour is, are there some universal truths, or are all our beliefs merely opinions? What do you think? Let's get your thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. My co-host for the hour is Nick Smith, assistant professor of philosophy at UNH, advisor to UNH's Socrates Society, and project advisor to us here on the Socrates Exchange. And Nick, let's go back to our callers. Marty in Brentwood's been waiting. Hi, Marty. Thanks for being on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I'm listening to the discussion. I'm struck that you're contrasting a couple of methods, the legal method of coming to the truth and maybe the scientific or the mathematical method. And I just want to ask about that before you subject me to a Socratic.
Subject you, Marty. Go ahead, Nick.
Let me just say.
Oh, sure, Marty, go ahead.
In the law, it seems to me the main question is who decides what's the truth. If you're talking, say, about when does life begin or abortion, does the judge decide, or does the mother decide, or does the doctor decide, or the legislature? And then the clash between a legal way of going at things and a mathematical one could be amusing. There was a story once where a state legislator once decided that pi, 3.1.159, an infinite sequence, that's too hard. Let's legislate that pi equals 3.1 once and for all and make it simple for our students. And they asked the mathematician, well, what do you think of that? And he said, well, it's true for large values of 3.1 and small values of pi.
Legislating pi. That's good. I like that. Marty, stay on the line. Go ahead, Nick Smith.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, you see how we're contested regarding not only what counts as truth, but who decides the truth, right? For so much of human history, the truth, the ultimate arbiter of truth was sort of religious institutions. When you think, for example, about questions of the Earth's position in the universe and the position of humanity in the universe, the ultimate arbiter of that was sort of religion. And once the scientists got in that game, we sort of, you know, we know what happens historically, and now we still have these cultural clashes that stem from that ultimate question about how do we determine truth? Where do we place our faith? Is science just another kind of faith? Significantly important questions.
So, Marty, is there a danger in declaring a universal truth?
Well, I think so. We believe in both. I mean, we think we know that mathematical truths, in a sense, are objective and other things are not. There is a danger. The thing is, how do you know, and can you ever really get it? And I guess that's what my question would be, or my absolute belief. I think I believe that mathematical truths are true, but then I wonder, if there were no human beings to think about them, would there even be a mathematics in the world? And doesn't that take away from the subject?
Do animals have mathematics? I think
they do.
They seem very precise in the way that they do things. They seem to have their own order of mathematics.
If I could ask you,
yes.
the way I hear you speak, you're very cautious, and sort of I can sense you're a perfect example of the tension we feel, that on the one hand, you don't want to be the universalist, cultural imperialist who imposes their views on others. On the other hand, you think there should be some truth. When you mathematics seems to be the candidate for you that's most likely to be universal truth, and that's kind of the low-hanging fruit on this issue, are you to any extent certain that even the basic arithmetic, truth is in arithmetic, like 2 plus 2 being equal to 4, that those will endure over time? Because, for instance, factual questions like for most of human history, humans thought the Earth was flat, right? Now we see that view is entirely wrong, right? Now everyone pretty much believes 2 plus 2 is equal to 4. Do you think there's any way it's possible in 100 years that, or 1,000 years, we'll come to see that we were just as naive about 2 plus 2 being equal to 4 as we were about the flat Earth?
Marty, what do you think?
I think we would say it depends on how you apply it. Mathematics is true in a way that's, to me, separate from the world. And I think, for example, if you mix a cup of water with a cup of alcohol, you wouldn't get two cups. I think it would be somewhat smaller. So there you'd have an example of 2 plus 2 not equal 4 that you could see. But then you would say, yeah, that doesn't apply to that situation.
Well, Marty, thank you so much for being a part of it today.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Marty mentioned math and science. And for scientists, this question of what are universal truths and what are opinions is implicit, Nick, in their everyday work. Exchange executive producer Keith Shields spoke with a UNH science professor about how he and his colleagues view this idea of universal truth.
My name is Thomas Pistol. I'm a professor of microbiology at the University of New Hampshire. Most scientists do believe there are a core set of truths, but we also know that we may not ever achieve complete knowledge of those. Because in the sciences, we're always limited by the information that we have. or if new data come in, we'll need to change things. Right now, we know certain core truths, but we would always have a qualifier there because tomorrow something else may come totally outside the thinking that will challenge our basic assumptions, such as believing that the Earth is flat versus Earth is round. And I'm sure that we could find people who were firmly believing that the Earth was flat. They could even provide information to support it. And at the time, given what people had available, that was the truth to them. We look back at it today, and we might say, well, that was a quaint thought. But we also then realize that 50 years from now, people will be looking back at us and say, oh, how quaint. People at that time really thought this, something that was so basic to us that we considered it an absolute truth, is subject to be challenged as new information comes along. So it's not just personal opinions, but it's also a sense that there are sets of core truths out there, but we're not sure exactly what they are or if we will ever know them. For many people in the sciences, not only do we feel that we are limited by the kinds of information or data that we have, but we also recognize that science as a whole has limits to it. There are certain things that can be addressed within the framework of science, but there are things beyond science. Is there a God? That are never going to be answered by science. And so we recognize that and realize that that's beyond the limits of what we can do within the sciences. Issues that scientists are grappling with now regarding universal truths has to do with what we call research integrity. Are there some practices or beliefs or codes of conduct that are universal? This is a very difficult one for scientists because we're not used to treading in this area. And yet this is a very important part of science today. So when we look at things like falsification of data, we struggle with trying to determine if indeed it is a universal kind of truth. For those of us in the United States, for example, I think we're pretty clear that making up information within the sciences is wrong. But is that something that we can arbitrarily say that's true no matter where you are in the world? It's really hard. And so that's an area where the sciences and ethics or philosophy are overlapping that I see we're struggling with.
That conversation with UNH microbiology professor Thomas Pistol was produced by Exchange executive producer Keith Shields. It's the Socrates Exchange today. The question we're pondering this hour, are there some universal truths or are all our beliefs merely opinions? What do you think? Let's get your thoughts. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Nick Smith, right back to our callers. Jim's been waiting in Newmarket. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the Socrates Exchange.
Thank you. My question is, if we're looking at this these questions rationally, is rationality itself a belief? And therefore, once you put it into that framework, you've already made some assumptions about what's true, rationality itself being the right process to use.
A fantastically interesting question, because this, for some people, this the quest of science, the undertaking of science, is only possible because we have rationality, right? And rationality is supposed to guide us towards realizing how things really are, right? Sort of, you know, as we heard in that segment, that there's a truth out there and rationality allows us to access it. What evidence do you see for rationality actually existing? Let me sort of fill in that question a bit, because there's sort of two views of the world. One is that humans are rational, somehow special and spiritually distinct, and we can access the truth, versus we're just kind of conditioned animals trying to make ourselves feel smart and important by making claims about universal truths when in fact are just, you know, attempts to dominate and control other people. Is there any good evidence that we are these sorts of significant beings that have rationality and can determine something as grandiose as universal truth?
Well, there's evidence that we have the ability to be rational, but I think there's also evidence that, we have the almost the need to be spiritual. And so when I talk with my friends who are more spiritual than rational, they say your whole problem is you're approaching these questions rationally. And maybe one way to get to maybe move towards some universal truth is to look for those that work in both of those frameworks, or even maybe multiple frameworks.
When one of your friends suggests that the right way to look at this is emotionally rather than rationally, how do you argue with that?
Well, they say spiritually, not emotionally. In other words, that your gut and your heart tell you more than your head tell you.
And how do you argue with that?
I don't.
Argument's over. Discussion's over. Next conversation.
I say what I tried to say before, which is that that maybe looking for those things that are true in all those realms are better than trying to attack each truth from the realm that you don't happen to be using at that time.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Jim. Join us the next time we do Socrates Exchange. All right?
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Nick Smith, let's take another one. This is Glenn in Springfield, Vermont. Hi, Glenn. Thanks for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the Socrates Exchange.
Good morning, Laura. This is quite a little trip. This is going to sound a bit like sophistry, I think, but I don't mean it that way, famous last words. Here is my truth, if you will. Humankind needs to believe in truth. Needs to believe in truth.
Otherwise, it's all just a mess.
Yeah, can you fill in? What is that need we're filling, you think?
Well, part of it is certainly making order out of chaos. It seems our intellects head in the direction of order. And although I'm realizing I just got into trouble because humankind needs to perhaps have faith in truth might be a different type of legitimate statement. I mean, we all have our eureka moments, and I'm not knocking them, but truth seems to be fairly migratory.
Truth is migratory.
Good.
Very interesting.
Yes,
go ahead, Nick.
There's a sense when I hear an existential tenor in your claim that we kind of need to believe in truth the way we need to believe in God, we've migrated from needing to believe that there is a universal God to needing to believe that there is some ultimate truth that we're progressing towards and that human civilization is more than just ants on a ball of rock spinning through the universe with no purpose, and that sense that we are rational beings makes us feel somehow higher and more important. Can I ask you, sort of in your daily life, do you think, say, the universe is rational, something more than chaos, and that we can find the truth with our mental faculties? Or do you think that's just an illusion, sort of more of a psychological construction than anything defensible?
Well, things seem to replace other things. Is there order to be perceived? I have to come back to we need to believe there is, and that gets us through the day.
Is there a universal truth then, Glenn? We need to believe that there is. Is there? Glenn, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Tough question.
I believe that the need is the truth.
Good. That's so fundamental for how we live our lives. One of the reasons that I teach this question to my students is that if there is a universal truth and we have this ability to access it, right, that means something very specific for how we build our lives, sort of around actual real core truths, whether it's in science or morality, versus, right, if you don't believe there's any truth in this, we're all sort of making this up as we go along, and the universe is really chaos, right, you'll have a very disposition towards everything you believe and your place in the universe.
Well, Glenn, I want to thank you very much for participating today. Thanks a lot. All right, bye-bye. And thanks to all who participated in the Socrates Exchange. And I want to thank also everyone who took the time to post at the Socrates Exchange site at nhpr.com. socratesexchange.org. And the conversation continues there online for the next few weeks. Again, it's the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org. Nick Smith, I want to close with this one posting that came in during the hour. This is from David. He says, fact equals truth, perception equals belief, and according to my wife, I am always, in capital letters, wrong. So thanks for that posting, David. And I want to remind anyone who wants to post again, it's the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org. And Nick Smith, for the next hour, you're going to be participating in a live chat, right, about this
question. I have lots more to talk about, dozens and dozens of paths to go down, so I hope to see you online.
That's great. Again, it's nhpr.org. And Nick Smith, good to have you. We'll see you the next time.
Thanks, Laura.
Actually, next time, Max Latona will be our co-host. Nick and Max Latona are sharing the Socrates Exchange with us. So next time, on September 25th, Max Latona will be here as co-host. The question will be, does gender matter? Again, that's the question for the next Socrates Exchange. Does gender matter? Join us for that on September 25th. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineers today were Dan Colgan and Isaiah Winnett. The producer is Dan Ankeles. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.